And she was the first congressperson to stand up in the United States Congress to call for the ban on use of what kind of weapons were there?
Depleted
uranium weapons in Iraq as well as in Afghanistan. Number one. She was also the person who stood up in the United States Congress to demand that George Bush should be impeached for war crimes. So we are not dealing with an ordinary person. We are dealing with a person of great courage and great integrity. Now, you know, I'm sure you must have read in recent months that the United States is losing its influence all around the world. Exactly. But you know, I am going to share something else with you. I don't think the US is really losing interest in the United States, or at least some Americans are not losing interest. You know, Cynthia went to the Middle East on January 24th, and the next day, January 25th, the uprising in Egypt began. Now, wait a minute. Please just listen. She came to Toronto on February the 10th, and the next day, Hosni Mubarak was out. So we are sending Cynthia back to the Middle East. We want some other dictators out as well. Yes, and we are going to send Stephen Harper with her to the Middle East. You know, there is a cartoon in these Egyptian rallies, and they were showing that all these various Middle Eastern tyrants, they are climbing up the steps to a plane that is waiting to take them to Saudi Arabia. You see, Ben Ali went to Saudi Arabia, and then the others are heading there. And then they have, and the last person standing over there is King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. And he said, where can I go to? So would you please welcome our dear sister, Cynthia McKinney.
Cold Toronto night. Assalamu alaikum. One of our most famous civil rights movement songs in the United States is by Gil Scott-Heron. He sings, "You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. Because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live. Hosni Mubarak is gone." Freedom-loving people all over the world are celebrating. We all watched on the floor, perched on the edges of our chairs. We were glued to our televisions. But just like Gil Scott-Heron says, the revolution was not on television. The revolution took place within the minds of individual citizens who suddenly awakened to their own strength by overcoming their fears. Fear permits you to bend your back. And as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stated so long ago, a man can only ride your back if it's bent. The people discovered themselves, and they overcame an oppressive state imposed on them by outsiders from the United States, the United Kingdom, Europe, and Israel, with Canada and Australia along for the ride. These countries rode the backs of the Egyptian people for as long as the Egyptian people allowed them to ride. And then the revolution within the minds of the people gave us and them something to celebrate. On February 11, 2011, the people of Egypt made history. They proved that with determination, unity, organization, and critical mass, the mightiest walls of oppression can come tumbling down. Ben Ali in Tunisia is gone. Crowds have amassed in Yemen, where President Saleh promised not to seek another term. Jordan, where King Abdullah replaced his prime minister. Algeria, where President Bouteflika said he would lift emergency powers, address unemployment, and allow democratic marches to take place. Apparently, 30,000 protesters showed up, and despite the pledge, approximately 1,000 were arrested, and others were beaten by Bouteflika's police. Protests are scheduled for Italy tomorrow. In Bahrain, a large march is planned for February 14th, the anniversary of the Bahraini Constitution. Pakistan is on the brink, with the foreign minister resigning and United States issuing a threat to sever relations if an American killer is not released after one of the embassy's hired guns killed three Pakistanis in cold blood, according to the Pakistani police. And a fourth Pakistani killed herself after her husband was killed by the American. Who'd have thought we would see this day? Once again, the world is rising up against oppression. I'm reminded of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s last speech before he was murdered, when he rejoiced to be living at the end of the 20th century, when men and women all over the planet were saying, "We want to be free." Well, this is a pretty nice time to be living in the 21st century, when people are doing the same thing. However, I do want to take a moment to remember that we have been at this celebratory moment before, because while we rejoice at what is happening, we must not relent. The Western world shuddered when Patrice Lumumba was elected by the people of Congo, and so they killed him. And when it was time for Mobutu to go, they brought in Laurent Kabila, who proved to be too patriotic for them, and so he was killed too. The Congolese were clear that they not only had to get rid of Mobutu, but of Mobutuism. With the murder of Laurent Kabila, they have not been able to achieve their goal. Right now, the West is searching desperately for their next marionette to dangle in front of the people. I see them already rehearsing. The West's person will be an avatar of a freedom fighter, but will really be in place to serve the West and not the people. From Tunisia to the Republic of South Africa, we must beware the incomplete revolution where we see face change and not regime change. Therefore, I want to shift our focus to another part of the world where the people's revolutions are making a difference in the lives of people as we speak, and countries are led by real revolutionaries and not avatars. I'd like to draw your attention to the Caribbean and Latin America, where from Cuba to Venezuela, from Nicaragua to Ecuador and Bolivia, and to Paraguay, the people have used the power of a free vote to completely cut the oppressive yoke of the West and to reorient national policy toward freeing the people and nature. The ALBA countries, begun humbly with only Venezuela and Cuba, have grown to a powerful independent bloc where economics is being redefined, and so too is humankind's relationship with the planet. Planet Earth is guaranteed to be here, but humankind is not if we do not change our ways. The ALBA countries are in the forefront of that change. I have long wanted the people of the United States to lead the world's change, or at least resist enough to stop its bad policies. Unfortunately, in the U.S., we have not yet had our revolution. People power has not yet taken hold. But we cannot be immune to what is happening in the rest of the world. Our time will come. People thought it had come when they went to the polls and elected President Obama. The people inside the United States were voting for peace. They were voting for justice. They were voting for hope. And they were voting for change. But sadly, what we've gotten is a more intense George W. Bush, with the largest Pentagon budget about to be presented in the history of our country. Our president wants to extend the life of the unpatriotic, un-American, and unconstitutional Patriot Act, and sends his Justice Department into court to defend George W. Bush's illegal acts of torture and rendition. Our president has launched more drones and depleted uranium into Muslim lands, rattled sabers at Iran, and accepted a hot war where the entire world is the battlefield, and insultingly sent our diplomats scrounging to collect DNA samples and frequent flyer numbers from the world's leaders. President Obama's Federal Bureau of Investigation raids the homes of peace activists, including the offices of nuns, pursues whistleblowers, deports Haitians back to an earthquake-ravaged Haiti, and targets Palestinian Americans for prosecution and prison. Therefore, we have a lot to overcome in the United States, but we can overcome these obstacles. And for anyone who has any doubt about our ability to overcome these obstacles, just remember the kind of commitment we saw in Malcolm X, who was murdered 46 years ago this month. Malcolm X knew that the United States government wanted him dead. You can read about it in the COINTELPRO papers, the papers of the United States government on their counterintelligence program. And according to the book, The Assassinations, on the morning of February 21st, Malcolm X received a phone call saying, "Today is the day." Malcolm could have not gone to the Audubon Ballroom. He could have fled to his home state of Georgia, or he could have left the country. He had friends all over the world. But he told his wife to get the kids dressed because he wanted them to be with him at the Audubon Ballroom. Malcolm X showed up at his appointment at the Audubon Ballroom. He showed up anyway, knowing that that day could be his very last day on Earth. Malcolm X did not let fear control his commitment to the cause of freedom and justice. That is the real stuff that we all are made of. Deep inside every one of us is a revolution waiting to happen. Thank you for supporting the Islamic Center and for supporting this event tonight. Well, maybe I'll start with the earlier questions and then I'll end with that other question that I always get. And I think I want to share a part of the response with Phil, because I think we are very good representatives of the independent left or the independent progressives inside the United States. I just signed a letter about 150 to 200 other members of the progressive community in the United States, basically calling out our progressive or so-called progressive brothers and sisters who are really just there to defend the Democratic Party. And so basically what we have endorsed is the use of civil disobedience in order to move U.S. policy away from this global war on terror. I don't happen to subscribe to the idea that every U.S. president has to become a war criminal. But unfortunately, that's the situation that we're in today. I think also in terms of the paralysis of the progressive movement in the United States, we have to look to who's funding it. And unfortunately, it is not independently financed. If we look at the entire construction of our political apparatus in the United States, I think it becomes very clear why you get 500 votes on a particular resolution in the United States Congress out of 535, if you're lucky, you'll get 500, that support Israel or Israel's purported interests, because basically from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party, the candidates who run for office are financed by the pro-Israel lobby. And so until we deal with putting our own team of candidates on the field of play, then this is the kind of policy that we're going to get. I think that leads us directly to the third question, which was about how do we make morality central in U.S. policy? We have to elect people to office who believe that respect for human rights and human dignity ought to be central to the formulation of U.S. domestic and foreign policy. There was this discussion that was held, particularly at the time when Henry Kissinger was the National Security Advisor to the President. And he basically postulated that there should be an end. There should be a break. There should be a decoupling of the idea and notions of respect for human rights from U.S. policy. And of course, we know now that Henry Kissinger is not only a war criminal himself, but he also, and unfortunately unprosecuted, but he also is a mover and a shaker behind much of what happens in the world and is able to move the levers of power, including the U.S. military, in order to achieve his own particular goals. So I think in the end, it comes down to us also financing our own revolution. Now, there was a question about the trip to Gaza. I tried to get into Gaza three times. On the third time, I actually got in. Now, I would like to take a little credit for what's happening in Egypt, because I did something, and it was quite innocent, but I didn't realize it was so taboo at the time. I was there with George Galloway on the Viva Palestina USA convoy, and one of those television stations invited me to come. I don't know why. Invited me to come and do an interview. And in the interview, I just compared the feeling that I got from the people on the street in Cairo to the government's position with respect to the blockade of Gaza. And I said, if the people of Egypt had democracy, then we would be in Gaza right now. We wouldn't be idling here trying to get into Gaza. The first time I tried to get into Gaza, I was on a boat called the Dignity. And it was a boat that was sponsored by the Free Gaza Movement. I'm going to make this really brief. The Israeli military rammed our boat, and they were trying to kill us.
Shame.
And this was at the end of the Bush administration and the beginning, Obama had not yet been sworn in. So Bush didn't say anything and Obama didn't say anything either. But we were on the boat taking humanitarian supplies. It was the second day of the Operation Cast Lead, and we were trying to get medical supplies into Gaza. Didn't make it to Gaza. It was the government of Lebanon that rescued us, and I didn't know how to swim, so I was real scared. That was one experience. Then the second time, so 6 months later, I decided that I would get back on a Free Gaza Movement boat, and still didn't know how to swim. And then the Israeli military kidnapped us and put us in prison for 7 days. So technically, even though I wasn't trying to get into Israel, I've been deported from Israel, and I can't go back for 10 years. I don't really intend to go anyway. And then the third time was the charm. And I was able to get in with George Galloway, although we had to seek permission from Egypt in order to get in, and they gave us 24 hours. What I want to say on my observations is this, that after enduring F-16, helicopter gunships, depleted uranium, white phosphorus, everything that the arsenal of the United States and Israel had to throw at the people of Gaza. There was rubble everywhere, there was destruction everywhere, but Gaza was alive. On the day that we arrived, as we were passing by, we saw a wedding. There was love and there was life in Gaza. As for future plans, if I were able to put the necessary components together in order to run a credible campaign, then I think I am ready to run that campaign. The problem, though, is that the moment my name goes on the ballot, the entire forces that the pro-Israel lobby has at its disposal will be used in every way against me. And so this would be really not just a national race where people from all over the country, like when the Israeli, the pro-Israel lobby finances my opponents because they raise money from all over the United States and pour it into my district against me, whatever the district is that I'm running in, against me. So I would have to have not only national support from all over the United States, but actually international support from peace-loving, justice-loving people from all over the world. When I am assured of that, then I'm confident that I can not only put my name on the ballot, but I can win. Thank you.